Hello, and welcome to Science Unscripted in where?
If I didn't know better, I'd say that this is a jungle in Uganda.
That is what it sounds like. That's what I would have said too. A jungle in Uganda.
And I'm hiding behind a bush, and I'm about to scare some chimpanzees with a fake snake.
if it sounds strange, there's logic behind it. The logic is to figure out what chimpanzees are capable of saying through vocalizations.
Listen to the sound that they make when they get scared by said fake snake. And now we're going to listen to a guy named Male
LaRoe.
Explain to us what these noises have to do with the study of the evolution of meaning and language.
Science Unscripted.
Hi, so my name is Mel LaRoe. I'm a researcher studying primatology and specifically the vocal communication of chimpanzees.
So, Mel, we just heard a vocalization of a chimpanzee. I'm going to go ahead and play it one more time for everyone listening. This hua sound or whatever that was. What is it, Mel, that we all just heard there?
So here, this is a combination of two vocalization, an alarm hu combined with a wah bark. So it's an alarm call that chimpanzee combine as well with the wah bark, which is a recruitment call.
An alarm call?
Yes.
Okay.
And if I've understood your study, the chimpanzees were alarmed because what, you and some colleagues in Uganda threw a fake snake at them or something. Can you explain what happened here?
Yeah, exactly. So so it was actually colleagues of mine who in 2011 conducted a snake presentation experiment. So they used a dead python. They stuffed a dead python and they presented it to the chimpanzees when they didn't expect it. And the chimpanzees reacted to this fake snake, basically.
And they reacted differently than they know. The sound that they made when they saw the snake was different than the other sounds that they're wont to making.
Yeah, exactly. So the chimpanzees, they produce this alarm hu when they encounter a low urgency threat. So it can be just a dead monkey in the ground when they are just simply surprised. It can be a random alarm. But when they produce the combination of an alarm hu with the wah bark of a recruitment call, then in this case, that means that they encountered what we call a high urgency threat, so specifically a snake. And this threat needs to be accompanied by recruitment from other individuals to help them drive the threat away.
So real quick, because one of my goals is that Gabe and I and our listeners by the end of this can speak chimpanzee a little bit. The normal alarm, if I find a dead monkey or a dead chimpanzee, would sound like what exactly?
It's exactly the same than the vocalization present in the combination. They just produce it in isolation, just the alarm call without the recruitment part at the end.
Without the bark. Okay, so if it's just an alarm.
Just the hoo.
Yeah, there's the.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a single hoo that they produce when they are scared or surprised, but it can be anything. It can be a snake, but just a snake that they see randomly, or like a dead monkey they didn't expect to be there, or an antelope even passing by. And when they combine this call with the wah bark, so the recruitment call, in this case, they are basically saying there is a threat that I need your help with.
I'm going to get my technician to play it one more time here. Can we hear that bark, that who bark again? So it's the who is the watch out, there's something going, and the hua is like, I need your help.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
All right. What led to this study?
So I'm studying. My main focus is to try and disentangle the evolutionary origins of language. And one key component of language is our capacity to combine words into phrases. So it's our syntax. And so I'm trying to investigate whether chimpanzees do also have this kind of layer of complexity in their communication. And if they do, then we can say that this syntactic layer of our language is not something that is unique to our species, something that we think is unique to our species for a very long time. But actually, it wouldn't be if chimpanzees have syntax or have like these rudimentary forms of syntax. That means that it is evolutionarily more ancient, and that the basic capacity to combine these meaningful sounds, so these word kind of units, is more ancient.
So to be clear, this would be the difference between an animal saying something like snake, which is a noun, it's a thing, versus an animal saying, I need help with this snake, basically. That would be the critical second part of the vocalization, the sentence.
Yeah, exactly. That would be it. I would say, though, that it might be just, you know, imperative. So it might be just danger versus danger, come and help. More like an order, let's say, an imperative. So watch out for the alarm call and then come here for the recruitment call.
And how did you guys decipher that the second bark was a recruitment call? Where did you find the syntax in that noise?
So we know that chimpanzees produce these barks in different situations. So it can be when they are fighting each other or when they are trying to hunt a monkey, for example. And they produce these barks, and it has been shown lately, very recently actually, that when they produce these barks, for example, in a hunt, other individuals are joining the individual that produced this bark, and that makes the hunt more successful. So we know it's kind of a recruitment call because of that.
This is not the most important question, but I'm really left wondering, this whole stuffed python suddenly appearing before the chimpanzees. I mean, obviously you want it to come out of nowhere from their perspective. You want them to be surprised.
Yeah.
And I don't think you want them to see the people, the humans, putting it there. So I feel like I would have gone for a catapult. Maybe you catapult the stuffed python out there for them.
How exactly did you do it, Mail? Did you hide behind a bush and throw a python out there?
We definitely did not catapult the snake. I mean, it wouldn't even be realistic, so I don't even know what they would do with that. No, what we did was exactly what you mentioned. So we hide behind the bush. So we had one researcher following the chimpanzee traveling and then coordinating with another one just ahead of its predicted path, so the way, like the direction of its traveling. And this researcher ahead hide the snake under leaves and then tied a fishing line on the head of the snake. So then it would move away from the location of the snake, hiding itself, themselves, in like behind some bushes, and then pull the string, the fishing line. And so that would make the snake move. Once the chimpanzee would reach the snake, they would make the snake move this way and uncover the snake, so it would come out of the leaves of its hidden place, and then the chimps would see it without seeing the human behind it.
I don't know why this is so funny to me. The idea of pranking chimpanzees. I was going to ask, what's next? You're going to, like, you know that trick where you put a bucket of water over a door frame and it dumps on their heads and you just see what happens? I guess, what other, any other pranks we can pull on chimps for the purpose of science?
Well, I guess you could imagine any kind of pranks. The only thing you need to be very careful is if you pull these kind of pranks, you need to be sure that it will not disrupt their natural behaviors, their natural interaction with each other. And you can't stress them too much because obviously you have a duty, an ethical duty, not to mess too much with these populations, especially we're talking here with like wild populations. So we have we need to be very careful with what we're doing. And these are very controlled experiments. And yeah.
That was my next question. Did you ever feel bad? Did you ever feel bad for the chimpanzees, what you were doing to them?
No, I don't know, because, well, first of all, they see snake every day, like not every day, but very, it's a regular thing, especially like there is kind of a snake season, and some month they see one snake a week, basically. So we were careful not to exceed this kind of rate of seeing a snake. And also, I mean, it's part of their natural behavior, seeing snake in the forest. It's a very common thing. And yeah, we also make sure that there were no long-term effects. So we made sure that they were not stressed too much after moving on. And when they kept traveling, we made sure that they weren't stressed about anything else after that, and that they went back to their baseline behavior. So no, not too bad. Basically,
I'm just wondering, for someone whose overall goal was to understand the evolution of language, back when you were a student, did you ever imagine that you would be hiding behind a bush in Uganda throwing snakes at chimpanzees?
Definitely not. Definitely not. I actually started my whole career with cheetahs and cheetah vocalizations, so I wasn't even like set up on primates at all. And I also didn't, like, I expected to do, like, in the study, we also conducted playback experiments to really show that they really understood these vocalizations. So we were playing these vocalizations to them through a loudspeaker and to see how they reacted. I think that I could see myself doing, but definitely presenting a snake to the chimpanzee wasn't something that I thought I would be doing, but I totally enjoyed it. It's very interesting.
I remember reading that chimpanzees don't have the ability to basically come back to the group and tell them anything. So, like, if a chimpanzee has gone somewhere and saw a flying saucer or saw something miraculous, something unbelievable, yeah, that you or I, we would go back to our friends and be like, "Oh my God, you would not believe what I just saw." That they, it, like, it wouldn't even occur to them to try to repeat that information, because I guess is that a linguistic fault or a lack of
inadequacy?
Linguistic inadequacy, or is it in their brain? They just don't have those neurons.
Yeah.
What's going on there?
So I think it's probably because they don't need it that they actually didn't evolve the capacity to do it. And I'm thinking it's, so what you're talking about is again, cycling back to what we were saying before, I think they don't have to use necessarily declarative, so they don't have to describe something they just see. They probably most of the time have to say, "Come here," or "There is food," or "I am here," or "snake," or "danger." And they rarely need to describe whatever they're seeing, because they can either show it to the other. So maybe actually there is a work in the gesture domain that shows that they use gestures to point and to show some items to someone. So they could definitely use this kind of communication to do the thing you're saying. My guess is that they don't actually need to really, well, communicate about these things, because they never saw a giant saucer, basically. Yeah, I don't know, yeah.
And that was Mail Leroux, who is usually based in Paris doing his research, and who was talking to us from an island, a French island in the Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah. There was a question that I asked Mail that didn't get included in that cut. I'd like to know what my dog's thinking. I really truly would, and if we got there someday, especially maybe with the help of AI, being able to decode some of the sounds that animals make and read the semantics out, that'd be awesome.
I don't think it's naive to believe we are going there, and that dog vocalizations, other animal vocalizations, will soon be translatable, soon as relative, into something more understandable for us, and that'll be beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. If you have any other questions, comments, anything to say about chimpanzees, snakes, or anything that we have been talking about animal-wise recently, we are su@dw.com.